plate a potential nugget.
Moving forward, Thomas, you say that sometimes while handling a tricky situation like a hostage crisis, rather than asking an explicit question about what they want, we're actually better off labeling a fear, you know, saying it seems like ... something that they might harbor to get to a better solution. I found, again, the link between a hostage situation and framing quite interesting. So can you say more about this piece?
Yeah. This is an insight from Chris Voss, who wrote the book Never Split the Difference. It's a book about negotiation, and he is or has been a hostage negotiator for the FBI. And he talks about this method of labeling, which is the function of labeling is to put emotions into play. Like normally we're discussing something, and the emotions of what's going on are unaddressed or kind of lurking in the background. What he would do, and this is a quite interesting anecdote or approach, you know, he's called in, somebody's locked themselves in an apartment with a gun, and there's hostages, and they don't want to go back to jail, which is what will happen if you know, if the police comes in. And he just found, instead of starting to say, hey, you need to come out, or all of the demands and all of that, you just start saying, hey, it seems like you're really worried about us coming in shooting. It seems like you're really worried about the idea of going back to jail. Like, and according to him, it does something magical in the conversation. It just allows you to put the not just the facts, but also the emotions on the table so you can start working on that too. So very simple technique here for, not for when you're in hostage negotiations, I hope, but when you're dealing with a conflict and you're perceiving something that's going on emotionally, then you might say, hey, it seems like you're a bit upset about what just happened here. And then just see how they respond. They might say no. They might say, no, you got that wrong. I'm not upset. I'm just going to, stuff's going on. But by saying that, it seems that, or it looks like, you create an opening for them to confirm or disconfirm what's going on in their heads.
It's a beautiful insight. It opens a window to a deeper and a more authentic conversation, right? In terms of what really matters to the other person, what's not being said. And sometimes, back to your earlier point about outside in, sometimes the person himself or herself may not be aware that they are coming across in a certain way, and showing the mirror sometimes can get them to bring it to their awareness and elicit a better response or a better situation.
Yeah, I love that actually, that people to different degrees can be aware of their own reactions, right? You can suddenly notice, hey, wait, I notice I'm feeling very tense. Why is that? You know, even just self-observing for that matter, I think can be helpful.
I have a condition called hanger, right? When I'm hungry, I get irritated and restless. And sometimes, you know, once my wife started pointing out, saying, it seems like you're hungry, then I know, okay, that's sort of setting off a chain reaction. And sometimes, you know, sort of they need to get into the autocorrect mode.
One of the examples I share in the book. So the book mixes business problems and personal problems, because I found that, of course, problem solving applies equally to both. And this story of my friend Tanya and her husband Brian, who used to a great marriage, they're still married, and they had a lot of fights, like fights that got worse than they needed to be over small things. And they initially started saying, well, we're from two different countries, so maybe it's a cultural thing, and or it could be a values, blah, 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 and none of that helped. Until they started just noticing from the bright spots, hey, was there ever a time when we didn't have this problem, even though it normally would have arisen? Like, what are the positive exceptions to this? And they just noticed, well, the budget is normally very sensitive to discuss. We normally fight over it. Only this day we didn't. And why? Because unusually, we didn't have the discussion in the evening. We had it in the morning. And why was that important? Well, hanger or tiredness. You know, when you are past 10 o'clock in the evening, if you're discussing something sensitive, nobody has the mental energy to take a positive approach to that. You don't want to discuss problems when you're hangry or when you are, I don't know what angry, tired abbreviation we need to invent a name for that.
Hangered, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Very basic idea of starting to notice these patterns and saying, oh, there's actually a smarter approach here. Instead of trying to change who we are, just change what time we discuss sensitive matters.
Very true. At a personal level, one of the guests on the podcast was Matthew Walker, who's written the book Why We Sleep. And he talks about circadian rhythms, which is sort of people's body clocks. So in my home, I've got the body clock of a morning person, and my wife has the body clock of an evening person, a late night person rather. And when we look back, some of the best conversations we've had was a period of a few months when I was in India and she was in the US.
Oh, I love that.
So I would call her in my morning, and she'd be in a really good frame. And I said, you know, this went by. And after about a few weeks, we said, this seems to be a lot more energizing than when we are in person. And then we sort of said, actually, it's possibly because our body clocks are perfectly adjusted when we are in these time zones. So it's one
I
of
love
those
that.
Things.
I mean, that solution sounds like it comes with other drawbacks, though. The long-distance relationship.
Not to indicate it's a solution, but at least once it came into our awareness, we said, let's not discuss anything of significance either first thing in the morning or last thing at night.
Yeah, I love that. Just,
anything between lunch and tea time is generally a good time.
It's sort almost of those like, you know, the when you have meetings in different time zones, it's those time zone planners when you can see, oh, here we're both green and here we're like, oh no, here you're red.
Exactly.
I love that.
Exactly. When I was at Egon Zehnder, we would often interview candidates as pairs. One of my colleagues would often employ an effective tactic. When a candidate is speaking about a certain work experience tentatively, my colleague would stop him and put him on the spot by saying something like, "Looks like that was not a very fulfilling stint for you," or "You seem to be defensive about what happened there." Suddenly we would notice the body language change, and very often the floodgates would open and the candidate would share openly, and we'd have a very different conversation about how they feel about the various stints. And I often would find that those passages of play were much more authentic than just a rehearsed CV regurgitation that we often go through. I feel that when we do this, we actually help people get in touch with the emotion they are feeling in the moment and heighten their momentary level of self-awareness. And it can often lead to a more authentic and a more powerful conversation. Very often people may not realize, but they get carried away by the heat of the moment. And sometimes tethering them back to the emotion they are feeling in the moment can lead to a much more productive outcome. This one's a fine line though. It's critical that the person on the other side doesn't feel patronized. I can very well imagine some situations where, if this is not done well and thoughtfully, the person on the other side could get wound up even more. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.